I'm Beth Golay, and this is Marginalia. Annie Hartnett's novel, The Road to Tender Hearts, is difficult to categorize. It's probably best described as a dark comedy with a touch of magical realism. The story follows 60-something PJ on a journey west to reunite with his old high school flame. And along the way, he's unexpectedly joined by his brother's grandchildren, his own grown daughter, and a cat that predicts death. And there's certainly a lot of death. So this book has an ever-growing cast of characters, but for the most part, they all revolve around PJ, who is quite the unlikely hero. Where did his story start for you?
His story started at the newspaper. So the newspaper that he's reading in the beginning of the story is something that I stole from real life. I met a man who was a theater professor and a very sweet, sensitive guy. And he told me that his wife cuts up the newspaper for him every morning and that she removes anything that would upset him about small children or animals. And I I asked him a few more questions about it, but I didn't know him well. So wasn't able to really what does the newspaper look like? Like how early does she get up in the morning? And I couldn't forget about it because it was both an endearing detail. And also I was like, who loves someone that much to cut up the newspaper that every morning? Who needs that much care and attention that demands their newspaper be cut up every morning? So PJ started there with a man whose newspaper was cut up every morning. In The Road to Tender Hearts, it's done by his ex-wife. So he has breakfast every morning with his ex-wife and her new boyfriend. So they have sort of a unconventional friendship, but she still does this gesture of love for him. And then PJ is also somewhat based on my own father, who I named PJ after. My dad is also Paul John Hartnett, and I often call him PJH. So I put another PJH, Paul John Holiday, Paul John Hartnett. And he's similar to my dad, and my dad is extremely generous and very gregarious. There's a line in the book where PJ Holiday is called the mayor of the town just by the people at the bar. And that is something that my dad is called in his town. So and then he's also somewhat based, and readers are picking up on this, both because of the cover and because of a couple of details, but he's somewhat based on the dude from The Big Lebowski. So people notice that with the Birkenstocks and the shorts do that. So he's a somewhat sad character. He's an alcoholic. He's a hoarder. His daughter died 15 years ago. His wife left him. But he also is at his core, a lovely guy and really does want what's best for the world. Like, he won the lottery. He won $1.5 million in a scratch ticket that he doesn't remember buying because he was so drunk. And he gives it away to sort of anyone who asks for it. Which is something that is based on my dad's generosity. I keep telling people, my dad doesn't spend that much time on the internet. So I'm like, don't tell my dad about GoFundMe, please. My dad will, once saw a sad story on the news about a racist incident at a Chinese restaurant. And he immediately sends a check in the mail and becomes friends with the owner, and not even in our town, So, and he also has a lot of anxiety about what life would be like if he did win the lottery. So he'll play the Powerball every so often, and then he'll call me and he'll just have to walk through who he's going to give money to, like how he's going to divide, like your aunt gets this much, your uncle will get this much, you kids will get this much. And I'm like, Dad, you didn't win and you're not going to win the Powerball. So knowing that and then reading about PJ Holiday, you'll see a little bit about my dad.
So is he the gentleman in your epigraph who was quoted as shut up and look out the window?
Yes, the epigraph is shut up and look out the window, PJ Hartnett said on every road trip. which is really the only time that we went on a big family road trip is the only time we went on an international trip at all was we went to Ireland for a month. And, you know, Irish cars are so small because Irish roads are so twisty, tiny. So we had been used to a minivan and there were three kids in the back seat and then my parents in the front. And it was just this tiny car. And we were always fighting back there. And my dad kept saying, shut up and look out the window. And some parts of Ireland, we'd be like, all we can see are hedges and sheep. It's a famous family saying.
I don't want to pigeonhole this book into one genre, so I'll ask about a few. You know, I saw this book described as a dark comedy, and you just mentioned that, you know, PJ in the book goes to his wife's house every morning for breakfast, and she cuts out the newspaper for him. But it's also like proof of life. It's meant to be a proof of life thing. So it's, you know, there's dry humor. There are dark moments. They're complemented with some laugh out loud quips and entertaining adventures. Did this blend of the light with the heavy come natural to you?
Yeah, that is definitely my personality. And I agree that it's not so easy to, like, someone else called it like uplit to me, which is a category that I think is like an uplifting, you know, and it is an uplifting book, but it doesn't quite fit on the shelf with some of the other books that you would more easily classify as uplit. I think of it as a dark comedy because that's kind of how I think of myself as a person with a dark sense of humor. It is something that has always kind of come naturally to me. I always go for the joke when I'm sad or when I'm going through something difficult. I think that is somewhat from, I mean, it's definitely a lot from my family. My family is Irish Catholic. There is that dark humor that is from that sort of upbringing. I also grew up in a town, which is, and I'm married to a Jewish man. There's a lot of overlap, I think, between Jewish humor and Irish humor. That's like a little bit, you know, not always appropriate about for the moment. And so those are some of my like influences in humor, but it's also a personality thing. It's how I see my role in the world is like I'm the one that makes the joke that breaks up the tension. But I am really sensitive, and I've always been worried about where I've been a vegetarian since I was six. So I've always been sort of like, you know, worried about animals. And in some ways I am PJ. I want my newspaper cut up I want the animals and the small children taken out of the newspaper, except I've never been able to look away from the horrors of the world. So it's both the darkness is things I worry about. The book is so much about things I have anxiety about and then how I cope with it is humor. So it's a real pairing of anxiety and humor.
I was also thinking, you know, it has a bit of magical realism, you know, with with the agent of death cat, the talking hat and the like, or, you know, were the talking hat and house part of PJ's imagination?
Yes. So at the beginning, the hat talks, he has a baseball hat that belonged to his daughter who died 15 years ago, who talks to him, and his house talks to him. And there's this line that's like, a house will talk back to anyone who lives there long enough. And I think it's really what I'm like, anyone who's lonely enough, like, you know, things will start to have, you know, an extra meaning. PJ is very lonely at the beginning. You know, he does spend every day at the bar, but he's really lonely and lost. So the magic realism is both ways to sort of say he's lonely without directly saying he's lonely. And also, I just love magic realism because I like fiction to be more than real life. And it's very hard for me to just write straight realism because I'm just always trying to, you know, I'm trying to make myself laugh. I'm trying to make myself like, wow. And magic just does that for me. So the town that PJ lives in is called Pondville. And I live in Lakeville. So I take both the real Lakeville, which is a small town in Massachusetts, a very ordinary town. And there's a pond in the town called Clear Pond. And then I put a mermaid in it, you know. So it makes it just a little more fun And yeah, not too much magic realism, but just enough to kind of amuse myself and hopefully readers.
So we have to talk about death, from Pancakes, the predicting death cat, to the loss of PJ's daughter, to, you know, the murder-suicide scene and everything in between. I lost track of how many, you know, mainly minor characters died. In the section at the end, Pancakes thinks, "Death is a magnificent invention because it's the impermanence of life that makes it beautiful." Talk to me about how you approach death in the novel.
So the first character you meet is Pancakes the cat. Someone who interviewed me recently told me that Pancakes is the main character. And I was like, that's not quite true. PJ's the main character. but it is, you know, I teach writing and I would usually say the first character you meet is should be your main character. So on the other hand, I'm like, maybe she's not wrong. But the first character you meet is Pancakes the cat, who is based on a real cat who was a nursing home cat in Rhode Island named Oscar. And Oscar, when he was alive, was a therapy cat in this nursing home, and he predicted over 100 deaths. So Pancakes is based on that cat with that ability. Although in my book, the cat gets kicked out of the nursing home because the people who live in the nursing home don't like to know that they're about to die, and it terrifies them that there's a grim reaper walking around picking them off one by one. So Pancakes gets taken to the shelter. And so the reader knows the whole time that the cat has this ability. PJ and the rest of the crew do not know that he has the ability. So Pancakes is the one who knows that death is all around them. And Pancakes gave me so much freedom in terms of putting in this light tone about death and about the danger that's all around them. And just allows me to do that, the same thing that magic realism allows me to do. It allows me to make the book more than a real life. And so Pancakes has an interesting perspective on death, as you just read what he says late in the book, that everybody dies, and that's something we all get. And it's, I did want to write a book about that death is all around us, that danger is all around us, but that isn't, like, it isn't a good reason to lock yourself in your house and never leave. And generally how I write animals is that they have a wiser perspective on life. This is my first time writing a cat character. In my last book, Unlikely Animals, there's a lot from the perspective of a dog. And his perspective is much like, people should just love each other. That's, you know, like, that's what dogs think. And they're so immediate. But my imaginary cats definitely have more of a, like, there's a line there that is that all dogs are born a clean slate, and all cats are born with a ancient knowledge. So I wanted to play with that cats have the sort of like Egyptian wisdom. And yeah, the Pancakes lets me get away with the tone, the dark comedy, and allow us to have a lot of fun with a book that has an extremely high body count. Like, I think it's definitely the most people that I will ever kill in a book that I also wanted to make. My challenge to myself was to try to make as many bad things happen and to try to make it my funniest book yet.
What can children teach adults in times of grief? And I'm thinking about Ollie and Luna, but also Sophie.
Yeah, so Ollie and Luna, all my books have so far, I have three books, and they all have children characters who are about the same age. They're fourth or fifth graders. And I think I love that age in particular because they are, and I used to teach in a non-traditional setting, but I used to teach fifth graders. And I love that age because they know so many things about the world, and they are also still total babies. And so I love that mixture of I really love that all children are experts in something. Like, truly, every fifth grader you meet, and even children smaller than that, are really experts in one thing that they later will completely lose. Like, you'll meet kids who can tell you every kind of dump truck and every kind of like the make and model of every construction vehicle. And then for me, I knew I could have done like a graduate level like diagram of horse anatomy, you know, and I don't remember that at all now. But children know so many things about the world, and they're really sensitive, and they notice things that adults don't. And sometimes they have really simple solutions that adults can't see. And they also have it's their first time experiencing something, and they have not always. If children go through a death of a loved one, like I remember when I was 4, my great aunt died. I was like, she gets her name in the paper. She's famous. Like, why is everyone sad? This is like her greatest moment. She gets to be in the newspaper. So children have a different perspective on the world. And then Sophie, who's a character who's in her 20s, she's much more of an adult than her father is. And I think she has a real perspective on, she still remembers what children need. Her character, one real purpose she serves in the story is to make sure that the children are taken care of. And some of that is just because she remembers so much, which she didn't have as a child. And she existed in the story to make sure that you didn't feel too much in danger about the children, because PJ is not your ideal caretaker by any stretch.
Another idea you wrote about that captured my attention. This was from a minor character, a Waffle House cook named Brandon. His father had told him that, and this is a quote, "A person needs three things to be happy: something to do, someone to love, and something to look forward to." There's some truth to that statement, isn't there?
I'm so glad that you asked me about that. That is given by an unconventional character, Brandon, the Waffle House cook, but it is actually advice from my next door neighbor growing up. I had two next door neighbors growing up who were like an additional set of grandparents, Dr. Chris and Mrs. Chris, and they were just very special to me. Someone asked me recently, well, like, who does retirement well? We were talking about our parents, like, who does it well? No one does it well. And I was like, there are people that do it well, and the Chris's did it well, and they took Italian lessons to go to Italy. Dr. Chris played the piano. He was this renowned cardiologist, and they had 4 children of their own. They adopted another one, and Mrs. Chris would, every Wednesday after her kids were grown, she would have me and 2 other kids over to her house for reading club, and she would read aloud to us starting from first grade on, and she would serve cookies and juice, and every Wednesday she would read to us for an hour, and then we turned it into writing club once we got into middle school. And so that was the sort of beginning of like my whole literary career. And Dr. Chris gave me my, when he found out I really was interested in writing, he gave me E.B. White's essays to read. And they're just really special people. And so Dr. Chris, his advice was, everyone needs something to do, someone to love, and something to look forward to. And I thought it was so special, but I had to find a way to share it in a way that would work for the story. So it's given by the Waffle House cook.
You already mentioned how you wrote a book that featured a dog's perspective, and this one has a cat's perspective. But there's also like the alpaca farm and the alligator. Can you talk to me about the importance of animals in your life?
Yeah. With my first book, Rabbit Cake, there's a lot of animals in that book. The little girl is obsessed with animals and she works at a zoo with unlikely animals. Again, there's a lot of animals in that book, as you see in the title. And The Road to Tender Hearts, I was like, all right, maybe I got to pump the brakes a little bit. But my editor had said, you know, people expect animals in an Annie Hartnett book. It's okay. It's like, it's dark comedy and animals. Those are what you're going to get. I have always loved animals. I love the natural world. I've always been the person who's like, I would rather meet your dog than meet your baby. Like I'm really excited about animals. In writing a little bit of magic realism, animals give me like there is a real magic to animals. There are so many things we don't understand about animals, why they are so in tune with us, what they know, what they think. I have a friend who she had sleep paralysis. In the middle of the night, she woke up and she was, paralyzed and couldn't move, couldn't do anything, couldn't talk. And all of a sudden she hears her dog flop off the couch and trot from, the living room to her bedroom and come and lie on top of her. And that broke the spell of the sleep paralysis. And so stories like that, it's like, how would the dog, she didn't call for the dog. How does the dog know that? And so that sort of like woo-woo sixth sense, the world is much more magical than we understand. Like that's what I can't resist about animals. It's just the unknown, and there's much more to this world than humans, and humans don't always make me feel good about the world. And so animals always do. I usually write outside during nice weather. I sit outside of my back porch under my hummingbird feeder. And it's like the fact that those little tiny creatures with heart, like it's like a heartbeat and wings, and like that they exist and that they have personalities. Like if I don't fill the hummingbird feeder every day, the hummingbird taps on the glass of my door. Like it's amazing. And so the thing about fiction writing is it makes you pay attention. And so it makes me pay attention to the things that I like to pay attention to, which is animals. And then I like to do a big comic, the ways that an alligator can make things go wrong can be a lot of fun. So that's not a spoiler, but you'll see what happens with the alligator.
This is a slightly related follow-up. When this group of travelers, they stopped at the largest alpaca farm in that part of Kentucky. Big Kevin from the farm said of the noise that the alpacas were making, "Sounds like a bad high school band, don't they?" And Sophie thought she loved the description, a band of alpacas. Now, I geek out over collective nouns. Is that the collective noun for an alpaca, a band?
No, I don't think so.
Darn.
But they are described like if you can watch videos of them humming, and they do sound like, awful. But they hum and they're very they can be very talkative. But they don't. I don't know what you would think an alpaca sounds like, but they don't sound like. I mean, I had kind of thought they were probably like giraffes. Like nobody knows what they sound like. They don't sound like anything at all. But they really hum. And there was a version of the book, which is not the version of the book that's printed, but that they were able to sing Christmas carols. But I took that out. That was too far magical realism.
You host a podcast called Good Moms on Paper about writing and parenting. And The Road to Tender Hearts is certainly a story about parenting, albeit without the traditional mother role. Did your podcast help form how you crafted PJ or even Sophie as a parental figure?
I would say the podcast does not help with my writing at all. The podcast, I love the podcast. The podcast, I edit the podcast and I do the guests. So the podcast takes time, but I like the podcast. The podcast is a real social outlet for me. But parenting, which is the podcast is about writing and parenting. The book, this book to me, The Road to Tender Hearts, is about parenting. And because my daughter was 2 when I started this book, and she's 5 now. And when we were, well, I hadn't started the book yet, but we moved out to Lakeville from, we had been living in Providence, and we had been living in this house. We had lived happily in Providence, I should say, for 4 years. And then we moved to a house in Providence that was just it, that house tried to kill us in any way that it could think of. It was a we moved in 2020, and the house had two gas leaks, two basement floods. We had rats that got into our car and caused $1,400 in damage. We had a teenager crash his car at the base of our driveway and die, and his whole family would come out every night and have a candlelight vigil at the base of our driveway at this very busy street. So I was like, they're all gonna get run over. And then, the rat guy came and said, don't let your 2-year-old daughter run at the rats because the rats will just run at her right back. And I'm like, this child doesn't speak English. Like she's gonna do whatever she wants to do. And then we had the mulberry tree cut down. It wasn't, we didn't own the house, so everything we had to go through the landlord. We had the mulberry tree cut down that was bringing all the rats to the yard. And then the arborist said, oh, you've got those trees, that tree, those trees are all going to fall in the house. And then we had black mold and we had lead in the water, and it was just like every possible thing. So we broke our lease and left, and the landlord did fix a bunch of things before the next tenant moved in. But then the tenant happened to know my sister-in-law, and she got some of my mail. So she sent me an Instagram message, and she asked me if I had any paranormal experiences in the house. Can you believe? So that is where, like, that was my emotional state in writing this book, that I was on the run from every bad thing that I could possibly imagine happening, while trying to do a good job taking care of a small child. And so that's sort of the background. Like, I think that does make the book like make emotional sense of what I don't really write about my own life, except I'll take like lots of scraps from my own life. But yeah, so the book is about parenting, and the podcast is also about parenting. And also we like to tell lots of jokes on the podcast. So
Do you have a hope for what readers will take away from this book?
my books generally, I'm like bowled over by how much more readers take away from them than I could possibly have hoped for. I really want to amuse people and to like tell a good story and to make people laugh. And sometimes they reach the right people at the right time, and those are the people that send me emails. But I also just feel like it's a little bit of an escapist novel, but it's not so escapist that you're going to feel like you're leaving all the darkness of the world behind. So in some ways it's not escapist, but it's a coping novel about how to laugh. I loved on Amy Poehler's new podcast, she said, this isn't therapy. I just want everyone to lighten up and have a good time. And that's a little bit how I feel about my books. Although sometimes it's like, well, lightening up and having a good time about hard things like is therapy. So they're not therapy, but hopefully it's like an enjoyable trip.
Well, the book is The Road to Tender Hearts. Annie Hartnett, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. This has been great.
The Road to Tender Hearts was published by Ballantine. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita and is part of the NPR network. Our editors and producers for this week's show are Haley Krausen and Lou Ann Stevens. Torin Anderson composed our theme music. This is Marginalia. I'm Beth Golay.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.